Ladies and gentlemen, what a time we are living in. The markets are moving and we've entered a world full of contradictions. Economies tanking, talk of recession or even potential depression, with all-time highs in stocks and other asset markets. DeFi madness, farming, pumping and dumping. What the hell is going on? Can you make sense of any of it? Don't worry if you can't. Today's Zoomer JD interviews guest is going to drop some knowledge. Let's get right into it. Zach Wall, what's up?
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to connect and sit down and chat for a bit. Looking forward to it.
To get into things, I think a great first question is just if you kind of explain a little bit about who you are and what got you into crypto, and we can go from there.
Yeah, for sure. I just sort of had it as a hobby for a few years in college, the Bitcoin and this whole space and everything. After my roommate he's a computer science major, big time anarchist, and I was studying econ and finance at the time, and he said, "Hey, you might be interested in this." I took a look, and it was just sort of a casual interest for about a year or two. He first told me like early 2014 or something. And that like gradually took it a little bit more seriously, found a couple different online communities on Reddit and Twitter and whatnot. A couple years after I finished college, I wanted to start working in the space full time, see if I could make sort of like a career out of it, I guess. Mm-hmm. I was spending all my free time on it anyway, and have been at a couple different companies sort of in this industry since then. Masari and Blockstream, and currently I'm just sort of writing about the market at CoinDesk. But I was on Twitter a lot and wrote a couple of newsletters and Medium posts, and went to some conferences and met people, and I guess that's how anybody sort of meets people and sort of creates an audience in this space, and I was definitely no exception. So
yeah, that's interesting. It sounds like we kind of got into it at its similar times then, because I started trading in like around 2013, 2014. So similar kind of start off time, and then started working in the space a few years later as well. So working full time in the crypto space. But when you're at college, I've never been to college, but I'm assuming that at that time, like, you're looking into a few different things. So what specifically about crypto was interesting as opposed to other things, or how did it kind of align with you, if that makes sense?
I guess a couple things. One is the opportunity to sort of make money, and anybody that tells you that's not one of their primary interests is definitely lying. Yeah. But my friend Dan, he was my roommate in school, he was trading a bit, and he was like, "Yeah, I mean, it's a super new market. Infrastructure is a little bit risky, but like, you can make some money, and it's fun, small community." But I also, the college I went to taught Austrian economics, so a little bit of the like economic theory that I was studying aligned with some of the economic theory that a lot of these early Bitcoin adopters sort of believed in.
That's super funny, man, because the whole Bitcoin thing started for me because I remember when the financial crisis happened in the late 2000s. Mm. That was a big thing. Yeah. We in Australia, we call it the global financial crisis, but I think the GFC. But I think I actually think that's only a thing that's said in Australia, really, because when I've said that overseas, people have been like, "GFC, what does that mean?"
Yeah, we just call it the Great Recession. I don't know.
The Great Recession, interesting. Yeah, so I remember asking my parents, you know, what's the deal with this GFC business? You know, what does it mean? And mm-hmm. they didn't really give me a good answer. And as like a teenager at the time, it really kind of piqued my interest. I'm like, how is this GFC business stuff on the news every day? And no one can really give me an answer about what it actually means. I started reading about economic stuff and gravitated towards the Austrian school, mostly because it just seemed to kind of explain things at a fundamental level in a clear way that other schools couldn't really do. So I found it really appealing myself as well. So that's interesting.
Yeah, we're sort of going through a similar situation now where I have some younger friends who are in the situation I was, sort of in the late 2000s, where there's a decent bit of macroeconomic instability and people are sort of questioning global monetary policy and traditional financial institutions and just a lot of things in general about the larger economy and how things have operated for decades. And like that questioning is a ripe opportunity for sort of the seed to be planted in so many minds of maybe there's a different way to run things. Maybe there's different tech that we can use. And I mean, that's here we are with that tech. So,
all right, this is a good segue because there's a couple of topics that come to mind here that I'd really love to discuss with you. For quite a bit of this interview, we're going to be talking about DeFi, but I think there's a part of it that a lot of people aren't thinking about that I think would be interesting to talk about. So there's DeFi in a practical sense. Like you look at the platforms, how they're technically built, what you're able to do with them that maybe you weren't able to do a couple of years ago or ever. But then there's also DeFi as in like, why does this engage people's minds? Why do people find it exciting? What are people actually using it for? And how is this similar to crypto kind of little bull runs we've had in the past, and how is it different? This is kind of a very cynical take. But say, here's a good example.
I'm typically cynical of DeFi stuff, so that's
totally okay, fair. Cool. Yeah, that's good. We'll be on the same page here. But this is like a really cynical take though. Say if you take based money, which is being marketed all over Twitter really hardcore, and you look at the website there and it's very funny. And they're being very kind of upfront that, you know, it's a game essentially where if you're smart enough to figure it out, you can make a lot of money. And if you kind of bring in dumb money and you might get burnt or something like that. But it's very kind of in your face about that. And it kind of occurred to me that maybe a big part of this whole crypto thing is because it's permissionless and people can build things like this. And because we're in a time where economically things are really messed up, but there's still people who have a lot of money, but they can't necessarily get yield in a safe way. So they're interested in coming into places like crypto and just trying anything. Some of these DeFi platforms that are permissionless, they could almost become like, it's like this weird economy of games, essentially, where we're all just trying to make as much money as we can by outsmarting each other. It's like run from one side to the other through like a heap of an obstacle course.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
A financial obstacle course, man. And it's just the battle of the fittest, you know. We're all just running through.
The economy of games label is really interesting because like on its face, there's obviously a high level of gambling, or at least it's a very prominent element, but it's not just like going to a casino and gambling, because every different game that maybe you throw tokens at, the rules are constantly changed, or the rules are always different in each different game. So it's not like you know what you're getting into necessarily. It's different in each situation. Each protocol is unique. There's a high, a prominent element of it is trying to outsmart people who are also very in the weeds of this tech. And know maybe just as much or a little bit more about this than you do. It's not, at least my perspective is, there's very little dumb money in like this DeFi stuff right now, just given like the relative market caps and trading volume and stuff. It's all very smart money, and people who are making money on it are obviously the elites of that smart money group, but it's a lot of games. And
do you think that this is different from previous bull runs with say early 2017 or even going way back to 2013, 2014, there were always bigger players who could push things around and say potentially take advantage of smaller actors in the space. But I really feel like with DeFi, it's kind of surprising to me how many, there seems to be a lot of big actors who move in money really quickly and are on top of things. And I haven't really seen that before.
Yeah, I agree to an extent. I mean, obviously in every market, there's big players who move the market. And like this cycle isn't too different, in my opinion, in that regard. But we've sort of seen, like, you've seen the market structure change significantly. So one way to think about it, or one particular aspect maybe to focus on, is we've seen the centralized exchanges like your Binances and BitMEXes and Coinbases and Bitstamps and all of these very well-known players, those markets are increasingly sophisticated. And like dumb money, if you are dumb money, which obviously is a very hard realization to make for yourself, but those markets, the point being, those markets are very sophisticated. But like, take those markets that are now sophisticated, rewind 4 or 5 years, and or maybe even a few more years, like that, now we're getting into territory before I was involved, but those markets back then are what your Uniswap and Balancer and Curve are now. Very, very rustic markets. And I guess we should throw Serum on there, the latest decentralized exchange to launch. And so, like, if this is, like, there's an immense amount of risk that you're taking, but there's also an immense amount of possible reward that you can rake in from playing on those markets. And we're seeing people like experience both, lose a lot of money, make a lot of money. So I think the like the same vibe, crypto's one of its core elements is always gambling. And it just like where that gambling happens can shift during different cycles. And we're seeing it shift to some decentralized exchanges, like most notably Uniswap, whereas before it took place on like your centralized platform. So
yeah. That's a really good point, actually. I hadn't considered it that way, in the sense that, especially for exchanges that offer high leverage, a few years ago, that was still considered very, like, these were considered very kind of gamey platforms. Why do you think that, it's an interesting question to consider, is why is DeFi popping off now? Was it just because the technology was finally ready, or do you think that it's because it's kind of related to this, the economic situation in the wider world?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess before I answer, maybe I should give a little bit of background on my own, like, personal beliefs, maybe, or just like views on this whole space as a whole. So depending on who you ask, I'm more or less sort of a Bitcoin maximalist, in the sense that Bitcoin is sort of what I care about way more than anything else. And I think, like, in the past, I've traded altcoins, and I think a couple altcoins, like the tech themselves, is interesting, but I don't really care about them much. And so I've seen read headlines and seen tweet threads and looked at some protocols and whatnot for a bunch of DeFi projects over the past couple of years. They've never really piqued my interest. Now, sort of getting to your question, as a segue from that backstory, what piqued my interest, and I think what is maybe like one of the primary catalysts, and if you're like a DeFi expert listening to this, you can laugh at me and disagree with me, but this is just my perspective from like following these things at a little bit of a distance. I think the catalyst here is pretty much Uniswap, like Uniswap, and you see, what is it, I guess, Curve and Balancer. I just pulled up a quick dashboard for the volume. Like, Curve and Balancer are the second and third largest by volume, but Uniswap like is dominating this market. And I've seen, like, one of the reasons why I think Uniswap is so important is because I've seen like traders and a bunch of random crypto communities who don't give a shit about the technology now all of a sudden caring about DeFi because like Uniswap is clearly a wildly successful product. Yeah. Whereas before, a bunch of these DeFi apps, like the developers and the users were the same. Like, if you drew a Venn diagram, it would just be one circle. The developers and users were the users. No one else cared. I mean, just today or something, there was the Uniswap founder shared a tweet that their 24-hour volume exceeded Coinbase's today, which is insane. Yeah. And I think that's why, like, DeFi is crazy. Like, Uniswap is carrying the team in that sense. I don't know how much new money Uniswap has brought into the industry, but it's definitely given life to a bunch of these tokens and protocols and whatnot that hadn't really found a use case. So there's some spillover from Uniswap pretty much to a bunch of other protocols. That's my view.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair way of looking at it. Also, for me, when I came across Uniswap, that's when I kind of got excited about DeFi stuff, because I used to be a really big fan of Shapeshift. And
yeah,
you're quite similar to you in the sense that was definitely a big Bitcoin person initially, didn't really get into altcoins so much. And I really liked the whole idea of essentially keeping custody of my own keys. And actually, that was a big reason I didn't get into altcoins, was because it'd be such a pain to do all this work to safely store them without keeping them on an exchange. But using Shapeshift, when I had figured that out, was definitely the place I'd go to exchange coins, even if I had to pay more money. And yeah. I remember having a look at Uniswap and going like, oh, you've pretty much brought back Shapeshift. Like, that's what it seemed like to me. There's also a few other platforms. Obviously, Serum is going to be hopefully bringing the same kind of functionality for, you know, non-Ethereum chains. So you could go like Bitcoin to Ethereum potentially, eventually. But there's also other platforms that are working on this, like this Thor chain. And also Loki, another Australian outfit, is working on something like this. So I'm really looking forward to that. If that could be pulled off and actually stick around, I think that'll be a really good addition to the space that probably won't go away.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people, and like rightfully so, criticize like this industry in general through previous bull runs, and now with Uniswap is sort of bringing it back. Like, we're seeing thousands of literal shit coins being created and listed and traded and whatnot. And you just sort of have to accept that's how it's always going to be. You don't have to buy them or trade them or whatever, but like that part of the space is never going away. But what Uniswap proves is there can be a pretty much fully decentralized exchange protocol that people will use, and people will use it even if you have to pay like $1,200 gas fees to like close a trade. People just love this product so much. It, like, its success is like undeniable, and I think that's exciting, because with that decentralized exchange protocol, anyone can raise capital, anyone can make a market, and like right now, obviously there's no order book or anything. Like, it's a very primitive exchange protocol, but future versions of Uniswap, I expect, will sort of offer those features, or some other protocol will. Even though I'm very skeptical of almost everything in DeFi, like I think I tweeted something about this a while ago, but like Uniswap is the one thing that has my attention, is like pretty successful in my opinion. And in a similar vein, all the Bitcoins being wrapped or tokenized or whatever like word you want to use there, and being sent to either trade or stake or whatnot, like, is honestly incredibly surprising to me too. I didn't really expect like wrapped Bitcoin or Ren Bitcoin or any of these other smaller wrapping protocols. Like, we have like almost $500 million worth wrapped or tokenized on Ethereum. And like, that in and of itself is surprising to me. Like, I did not expect them to take off like that. And obviously, like, relatively, that's a pretty small amount, but also it's kind of a large amount. I'm excited to continue watching that trend. Yeah.
Do you think there could be, I remember in 2017 during the ICO bull run and all this demand for Ethereum so that people can do their ERC20s and whatever, and there was this whole big flippening thing. Everyone thought that Ethereum was going to take over Bitcoin. Do you think that if things keep going in the direction they're going, that could become like a thing again?
I think like, it already is kind of a thing again. At least some people, I've seen some people revive it a little bit.
I saw a few tweets on the weekend, actually. Yeah.
So this is a difficult answer, and I don't want anyone listening to this to think that like I hate Ethereum, but like Ethereum has a lot of things going on that it needs to execute in order to, like, not in order to stay successful, because I don't think like over the next year or two any protocol is going to overtake Ethereum, but like, they've still got to launch ETH 2.0, and now like this massive on-chain volume from like Uniswap and other successful exchange protocols. Got to figure out some way to scale and reduce fees a bit. There's just a lot of like technical problems that Ethereum had, like new issues coming up from like the success of Uniswap, and some old ones that they've just kept punting down the road. Like,
how well do you know how Ethereum works though? Because I'm going to be really honest here. I haven't spent that much time learning about Ethereum, how things actually work there, because to be honest, it seems to be an order of magnitude more complex than Bitcoin. And the thing I like about Bitcoin And, you know, people who are big Ethereum fans might sound stupid for saying this, but that's okay. I just feel like with Bitcoin, it's technical and it's there's a lot of parts, but I can pretty well understand how it works. And I can kind of monitor the network myself and have a look at things. And it seems very stable. Things work the way they should. They're really careful about changing things. Whereas whenever I try to apply that same attitude towards Ethereum, I just go, this is just too complicated and kind of like, it feels rickety and all kind of tied together. Things keep changing really quickly.
I agree. I agree 100%. I think I have maybe like an eighth grade knowledge level of how Ethereum works. Like, definitely haven't passed high school or gone into college, but like eighth grade, I think I understand the basics. But for example, there's plenty of things I don't understand. There were some tweets going around about like bring up miner extracted value, which is, I don't even really fully understand it at all, but it's some Ethereum concept. I'm like, people were saying it's very misunderstood, very important concept. I was like, okay, I'll look into it. And so I have a reading list now, but there's plenty of concepts like that in Ethereum that I don't understand. And I'll be honest with you, one of the reasons why, partially maybe just because I'm too dumb to understand it, but also because like I don't care really. Like I see Ethereum and Bitcoin is trying to become, a lot of people put them as like competing against each other. I see them as very, very different protocols. One is trying to be like in money. The other is trying to be like a decentralized computing platform.
Yeah.
And like Uniswap has proven like we can build successful things that a lot of people will use on this platform, but then there's like scaling problems and other tech problems that come from like that severe use. But Uniswap has proven like Ethereum can be useful for something, just like sort of Bitcoin has been proven over the past decade to be useful for something very different. But I don't like Ethereum's primary use case doesn't really interest me that much. I came into Bitcoin for like the economics and to make some money and stuff. So that's, and also because Bitcoin is much more simplistic, it's just easier to understand.
Mm.
So if you're like a pro on Ethereum listening to this, you can make fun of me, that's fine. I won't be the first to admit I don't understand anywhere near everything
there
is to know about Ethereum. Kind of don't care.
Someone can make one of those. I really love that meme at the moment with like the bell curve. And it's got the guy on the dumb end and the smart end saying the same thing. Like you'd have a Bitcoin maximalist on each side. Too dumb for Ethereum or too smart for Ethereum, essentially.
True. Yeah.
So just to backtrack a little bit, interested in going into this point a little bit more. So saying before about you can think of DeFi and maybe crypto in general to a degree as this financial obstacle course. This whole thing with, as I was saying before about Uniswap and some of these DeFi projects, actually, to be honest, I was almost starting to lose interest a little bit in crypto at the start of the year. And on a personal level, I was planning on taking some time away and trying not to think about the space for a bit and to, you know, look into some other interests. And then the DeFi stuff, I couldn't help but like keep reading about it and trying the different platforms and things, and it actually kindled a genuine interest again. It really reminded me of crypto back in the early days, but I think maybe earlier on I was a little bit naive and felt that there was actually more real world utility to these crypto projects than there actually is. And what I'm seeing now is maybe there isn't that much real world utility for this stuff, but that might not actually matter, as in we're living in a world where people spend more time online anyway, and maybe in the future, hundreds of millions of people are going to spend all their time looking at these like financial obstacle courses, essentially, and playing with each other. And maybe that is the right way to consider what's actually going on here. Like, that isn't necessarily a problem if that's all this is, you know. maybe it doesn't matter. So yeah, what do you think about that? Like, or do you still, because you said before one of the reasons you got into this space is an interest in Austrian economics. And I think for a lot of people who are like that, at least initially, I know for me, I thought that potentially crypto could have like lots of real world applications and help resolve the real economy. But now I'm not so sure about that, to be honest. But I'm not sure it matters anymore.
Yeah, that's a great question and a huge question.
Yeah.
So let me like answer in two parts, one with Bitcoin and then one with DeFi. With Bitcoin, in my opinion, like the use case is proven. It's not going anywhere. I highly doubt that anything will sort of flip in Bitcoin. It's the first successful, like plenty of people have tried to build Bitcoin before Bitcoin, and plenty of people have tried to sort of rebuild it and iterate on it after. And yet here we are still like with Bitcoin as the dominant cryptocurrency. And over the past couple of years, especially this year, we're seeing more and more professional investors and like serious money take Bitcoin seriously. And not like really any other cryptocurrency seriously. The combined market caps of like the next 50 coins after Bitcoin is like a little more than half Bitcoin's market cap, which like says something. Bitcoin is the clear winner and its use case for Bitcoin is proven. And I know like a lot of people, cynics and journalists and whatnot in the mainstream media may disagree with that. But in my opinion, Bitcoin is not going anywhere. Now, DeFi, in my opinion, still has a lot to prove, and like all these other chains still have a lot to prove, just because, like, especially relative to Bitcoin, no one really uses them. And to your point of if this is just a game, like the game economy is like the primary use case here, or is like peak performance, as you might say, does that matter? I think with Uniswap and with like crypto in general, regardless of Uniswap, that gambling will always be there. And I think Uniswap is a reminder for like maybe newer people in the space that like this was a primary attraction to crypto, and it still is, and it always will be, like the chance to gamble and game and this sort of Wild West feel. It's never really going away, regardless of how many institutions come into Bitcoin or dabble in other smaller cryptocurrencies.
So so it's almost like that whole gaming, gambling, speculating, Wild West thing is always going to come in waves as well. Like it's really ebbs and flows, but then some of this money that comes into the space will permanently allocate itself into, say, more fundamentally valuable assets like Bitcoin that have, you know, a store of value use case and have all this infrastructure that is stable and, you know, a lot of it's regulated now and pretty legitimate. So, you know, you can comfortably store some money in there. That Bitcoin world does kind of sit in its own thing, but also it is a big beneficiary of these waves of speculative interest in side projects.
Oh yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Like there's no doubt, like Bitcoin controls the market, and so like if Bitcoin drops, other coins sort of can collapse, but also Bitcoin benefits from a lot of money coming in to speculate on these smaller coins. I think to your original comment of the potential to sort of fix the economy and everything that's wrong with global financial markets, I agree with you. I don't think that's something Bitcoin or crypto can do. Like you could probably build some cool decentralized alternatives to some centralized protocols. But I think I agree with you in the sense that I'm very skeptical that at least in our lifetime, that it'll just be completely decentralized and replaced with all of these token protocols and whatnot.
Oh, I think as well, though, the thing is, the way I've kind of reconciled myself with that realization that, you know, Bitcoin isn't necessarily going to fix these problems, but what it still does give people is, at least it gives you an individual ability to opt out of that system largely. The crypto, but you know, keeping your wealth in crypto is very difficult. You have to really take a lot of personal responsibility. You have to, it's risky and such. But even the messy Wild West of crypto, I think it follows generally some kind of economic rules that I find more enjoyable to deal with than the mainstream financial world. It's not perfect, but it's better.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And in many ways, it is better. I think it's also just different. Like in traditional markets, you know, the meme of like stock traders, equity traders, just being like as good as a monkey throwing a dart at a wall, basically.
Mm.
And in crypto markets, that's no different. Like it's a different type of gambling, but gambling nonetheless. To trade crypto markets or traditional markets, but traditional markets have sort of this novelty and allure, and also sort of this meme of being more accessible, which in many ways is true, but more accessible. And so people will sort of gravitate to that. We've seen a lot of retail gravitate to trading traditional markets, especially over the past 6 months or so, but historically also to crypto markets. I think one other thing I wanted to throw in there, though, related to this, is I think over the coming years, and we're starting to see it a bit now, is I expect a continued like pronounced bifurcation in the crypto industry between sort of like your Bitcoin and maybe Ethereum, but your like very established, significantly less volatile institutional adoption assets, and then like your truly decentralized protocols that are not KYC'd, are not controlled by any institution or anything, and sort of feed and continue this like Wild West gambling like core crypto ethos. So I mean, we've seen that in previous bull runs, but then like even BitMEX is implementing mandatory identity verification now, like sort of these stalwarts of previous maybe gambling and Wild West era crypto are sort of coming under the like institutional regulatory umbrella that every other market does. And at the same time, we see Bitcoin historically and still like very volatile and whatnot being bought up by publicly traded companies and legendary traditional investors and all of this.
Yeah.
While at the same time, we have Uniswap and all these like crazy tokens and new protocols and completely
markets. They're not necessarily incompatible.
Oh yeah, I don't think they're incompatible at all. I just think we'll see a continued like bifurcation, and they'll definitely overlap and interact with each other, but the difference will be more apparent. Whereas before, a lot of people just sort of assumed like Bitcoin and all the other cryptocurrencies were the same. They're all volatile and all sort of speculative, but some of the bigger ones will gain more legitimacy, and then we'll still have very core Wild West.
Yeah, here's a potential future. I'm curious to see how you would feel if this happened. I think that the DeFi stuff is only, we're like not even at the end of the beginning yet. I think there's going to be some kind of event where one of these protocols will kind of catastrophically fail, like a DAO hack type scenario. But even worse, like some people were saying that Yams was bad, but I don't think it was that bad. Like, there needs to be where a lot of people lose a lot of money and people write off DeFi, and then it bounces back and, you know, everything goes another 10, 20x from here. If this is going to be similar to kind of the waves I've seen in the past, I think actually that's what could happen here. And if that happens, we might get this whole flipping thing again. So for someone like yourself who seems pretty Bitcoin heavy, I guess, how close does like Ethereum have to get to flipping over, say, Bitcoin? And say, for example, if Bitcoin becomes associated with this institutional side of things and this stable, regulated side of things, and Ethereum becomes known as like the Wild West area which facilitates Uniswap, facilitates all these kind of crazy gambling platforms, essentially, you could see more retail people coalescing around the Ethereum stuff and essentially kind of saying, you know, if you're a real crypto person, you should be in this camp. I could really see something like this coming to fruition.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to make a lot of my hardcore Bitcoin friends mad by saying this, but like I could very easily see that as well. Yeah, for the reason that you mentioned, like a lot of serious money is paying a lot of attention to Bitcoin now, especially after like Paul Tudor Jones's letter, a couple companies like allocating some of their cash reserves to Bitcoin exclusively. It's getting a lot of attention, whereas Ethereum might, I mean, like we mentioned, there's some technical issues and the protocol itself is at least an order of magnitude more complex than Bitcoin. But assuming none of that like kills or significantly weakens the protocol, Ethereum could sort of carry on this Wild West of crypto era. I think maybe like this is long before I got in, but I think maybe Uniswap could be like a Trade Hill or a BitInstant sort of DeFi or any of these other, like I just use Uniswap because in my mind it's the most successful. But eventually, like I agree with what you said completely. Eventually we'll get sort of like a Mt. Gox event that like crushes hopes and dreams. And then it'll, like sort of, that'll be the defining moment for DeFi. And I expect, like it's not going anywhere. it just has a lot to prove. And from that moment on, it'll improve. And
people never learn, man. I remember with the yams thing, I tweeted, this is going to go Dow style. Give it like 3 days. And then literally on the third day, they had the whole disaster thing. So
what's crazy in my mind is we have like yams and all these rug pulls on Uniswap and a whole bunch of people losing a whole bunch of money. And everyone's so eager to sort of like call a top on the cycle here, just because I think like there's a lot of battered bulls who have like suffered through the bull market or the bear market since 2017. And they're like, this can't be real. This is over. Like top is it, we're going to crash more. But I'm like, and I suffer from some of that too. Like I'm skeptical more often than not each day. Like, how are we trading almost at 12,000 still? Like, where's the crash? When is it coming? But at the same time, we're trading at almost 12,000 and no one cares. Like that is almost that's incredibly bullish. So I don't think the top is in for like, I can't really speculate on market cycles, but in my personal opinion, I don't think the top, these like rug pulls and yam like events signal a top by any means. I think it's just like growing pains. And
here's a prediction for you. I reckon we haven't hit the top until essentially some country's regulator bans Ethereum. That'll be the top of DeFi, when there's enough people complaining about losing money on Uniswap and stuff that the regulator is just like, no company in our country is allowed to sell anyone this Ethereum stuff, this financial drug.
When we see regulators start cracking down on Ethereum or Uniswap or Serum or something, then we'll know maybe it's close to the top. But at the same time, that would be hugely validating for the protocols that they've gotten to the point where
some, you know how sometimes regulators put out, you know, they'll issue a statement where they're like, we're advising our citizens to be careful with these platforms, like, and then they listed like Uniswap and all this other shit.
That would be great.
I got a couple more questions here. Do you know much about modern monetary theory?
A bit, yeah. I sort of was exposed to some of it through studying Austrian economics as sort of like a counterpart, but I'm not an expert by any means.
Yeah, okay. So I'm not an expert either, but I've noticed recently, at least in Australia, some of the most kind of popular financial commentators who, say, do financial commentary on the news and such, have really been talking a lot about modern monetary theory, like in public forums, which is quite interesting. And there's one, actually, it's kind of one of my favorite commentators. He's actually pushing for the Australian Reserve Bank to actually properly do some research into modern monetary theory to, you know, his words is just to check, you know, if it's legit, then we should be using it or something like that. But I think in a weird way, you know, some of the MMT proponents are saying that we're already trying some of these theories with success during this lockdown. So, for example, I'm not sure what you're doing in the United States, but in Australia and the UK, our governments are actually paying people's wages for businesses that have been forced to close and spending an incredible amount of money, like just a really bonkers amount of cash. The effects have yet to be seen, but I was talking to a friend about this, and my intuition as someone who's mostly read Austrian economic theories to explain things is that this is really dangerous. Printing all this money is, you know, essentially going to cause some kind of inflation that will take wealth from mostly everyday people who predominantly hold cash rather than, you know, other assets. My friend who I was talking to this about, he was kind of saying, you know, one of the mistakes that a lot of crypto people make who are mostly, you know, from this Austrian school of thought is that they don't realize that essentially the reserve bankers aren't stupid. What they're doing maybe isn't fair, and maybe it isn't the way you'd want an economy to be run, but they actually do know what they're doing, and they actually will be able to get themselves out of this through financial engineering tricks. It's just that the outcome isn't desirable. So the outcome is, you know, more wealth inequality, protecting the status quo, protecting large companies at the expense of small ones, protecting wealthy individuals at the expense of poorer ones. But essentially, they will be able to keep society together and keep the economic status quo protected. And they'll probably do it through modern monetary theory.
Yeah, you're right. This sort of just shows how in the weeds and in a bubble I am generally, like, by being in crypto. But, like, for anyone else, modern monetary theory is a pretty, like, heterodox economic theory, whereas sort of I encounter it daily on Twitter and see articles about it, and it's sort of a little bit old hat to me at this point. I think your friend is right to the extent that, like, some crypto people don't understand that, like, the Federal Reserve, to an extent, knows what they're doing. To another extent, the Federal Reserve being, like, the main monetary authority in the U.S., so as far as I know, a majority or even a small amount of, like, wages just aren't being paid right now by the government. But I expect we'll get to that point at some point in the future. But they have sent out some stimulus checks to just everyday citizens, actually only one round of those so far. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, in my somewhat naive opinion, the conflict, the disagreement just comes down to we want different things from our monies. And the Federal Reserve or, like, monetary authorities around the globe want to keep stable inflation and keep low unemployment. And that comes at the cost of devalued currency and loss of purchasing power, whereas sort of your Austrian monetary theorists want stable purchasing power and sort of almost no inflation, like no elasticity in the monetary supply. And like those two, at a first principles level, those two ideas, like, are incompatible. And I think this is a bit of my Austrian bias here, but, like, I think we will be able to get through this crisis, but just printing money, obviously, there will be a day of reckoning for that behavior. Like, you won't, the financial engineering tricks won't solve the problem. Trump, whenever, a couple months ago, I forget the exact time, made some comment to the effect of, like, we can just print it if we need it. And, like, yes, that's true. It's sort of been like a secret that no one really wants, an open secret that no one really wants to say.
I'm seeing another bell curve meme with, like, a really stupid person. Can't we just print that shit? And then a really, like, smart banker guy, can't we just print that shit?
Yes, exactly. Like, yes, you can and you should, because, like, businesses are closing down left and right. People need to live, and, like, we don't want them all to starve. So just print money because you can. And then we'll figure out the problem once this is solved.
See, I think I would say the Austrian take here, Austrian school take, would be that when you have a financial crisis or a situation like this where a lot of businesses are going up, a lot of properties are being turned over and such, at a time like this, people, if you had a, you know, state hard money with very low inflation and natural interest rates, people would be able to save money. And people who'd been less risky, who had taken less risks, would be rewarded in a situation like this because they'd have the capital to move in, buy closing businesses, take risks now. And the people who had overextended themselves would be penalized. Whereas what this financial engineering does is it essentially removes any downside to overextending yourself. And it gives no upside to not taking risks and saving. Maybe that's not actually a better situation. Obviously, the kind of mainstream economic belief is, as if I understand correctly, is that it is a good idea to essentially encourage this rampant, you know, risk taking, and to penalize people who are more risk averse. So,
I agree 100% that, like, in every market there will be winners and losers. But what we've seen is monetary authorities, I guess, have sort of reduced the possibility of how many losers there can be just by printing money. And so in sort of like classical Austrian business cycle economic theory, it is good for like businesses to close and investors who have free capital to come in and sort of invest in those opportunities and whatnot. But personally, I think the best course of action for the system, global financial system as it is right now, is just to continue printing. because, and like, I'm grateful for the fact that we have this alternative. We can just sort of opt out in our investments and like other aspects of our financial decisions as a competing system. And maybe if like the fiat system completely collapses, then here we have this golden parachute waiting for us that we've all known about for years and years. But like the point of Bitcoin is to compete with, or maybe possibly at some point in the future replace, but at the very least now compete with the system.
Yeah, it's had an interesting idea here. So another idea that's been discussed on this show in the past is this idea of the abundance economy. So essentially, we've gotten to the point now where there's still a lot of poverty in the world, obviously, and even in developed countries like the United States and whatever. But by and large, people now are more prosperous than they've ever been by a long shot. You know, the average person today enjoys a very comfortable, safe, healthy life compared to the historical norm. And essentially what that means is we can, like, the cost of messing around with our economy is potentially less devastating than in the past. I know that's like a very dangerous thing to say, and a lot of Austrian school people would be shaking their head at that. But like, I think it's kind of true in the sense. And potentially what that means is that, say, if the government just prints money to keep all the businesses alive, and what that actually means is you've got some like mum and dad who've borrowed 20 times their annual income to run some zombie business. And that means that with all this intervention, you can like, you can ban foreclosures and you can force the landlords to give them a rent decrease. And then you can like have some program to pay the landlords another way. And what that means is we have this like joke economy where people are essentially running businesses, zombie businesses. And then you've got people speculating through this like online games in the crypto space. Like, it's all part of this massive crazy economy, but I think we're allowed to experiment like this and try these interventionist policies essentially that at least in the mainstream world. And then we have this wild west crypto world, because at the end of the day there's a significant proportion of people who are living in an abundance economy where the downside of them failing isn't that they're not going to be able to eat or that they're not going to have a roof over their head. That's probably the time we live in, and that's why there's this explosion of interesting economic behaviors, I guess.
And it's a valid critique of sort of Austrian monetary theory in favor of sort of very liberal and aggressive inflationary Keynesian or MMT monetary theory that, like you said, the quality of life for the average human today is at its highest point ever in human history by an enormous margin. And you can maybe argue whether that's like a causal or just a correlative relationship there between these sort of progressive financial policies. But I think there's like at least some sort of causal relationship there, but there's obviously a cost, and the cost is sort of like some of the direct effects on the money itself, like purchasing power and trust in these financial institutions and whatnot. But undeniably, like, we live in an incredible, obviously far from perfect, but an incredible average quality of life right now. The pace of innovation, average quality of life is phenomenal. How we'll get ourselves out of sort of the financial mess that we're in now, and sort of whether or not these financial engineering tricks will actually exacerbate the problem or provide us a remedy down the road is an open question in my opinion. But life on average is great. There's atrocities all over the world everywhere. But relative to 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 1,000 years ago, life is great. And I think a decent bit of that has to do with sort of the monetary policies that governments around the world have adopted over the past few centuries. And we like have no way of comparing whether or not things would be even better if we had a more conservative global monetary policy. But yeah, I wasn't really taking that thought anywhere. I agree. Like, life is pretty good, and have to sort of hope for the best that the financial engineering tricks that are being played now don't collapse the economy tomorrow.
It's certainly interesting times we live in. So I'll finish up with one last question here, Zach. This has been a really, really good interview, I think.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fun. Thanks.
Yeah, no worries. So the last question is, if crypto didn't exist, what do you think you'd be thinking about all day instead?
Yeah, that's a great question. In college, my original plan was to go to law school after undergrad, and I wanted to work in corporate law of some sort, maybe become an antitrust lawyer or civil liberties litigator or something to that effect. And that's what I sort of worked on for a couple of years after undergrad. I did go to law school, but I worked in a couple law and policy firms in Washington, D.C. And I'm a pretty hardcore libertarian, so almost definitely would have ended up in that sort of legal or political sphere in some way if Bitcoin hadn't like come across my path or never existed or something like that. So
cool, good stuff. All right, well, thank you again so much for your time, man.
Yeah, thanks so much for chatting. It's great to connect and talk about some of these concepts. I've had a lot of fun. Really appreciate it.